This is fun. The FU Network.
But when you're here at the theater, hot dogs are at their best.
Hey, everybody. It's me, Ed the Sock. Oh, sorry. I should turn off the radio. Hold on. All right, sorry. Just listen to a little Rolling Stones. Hey, it's me, driving. I had the windows open, but it makes too much noise in the recording, so I closed them again. But here I am, doing my thing, driving in my car. Don't worry. I don't wear my mask. Like, the thing I don't understand is when I see people wearing their mask or their face shield inside their car, and they're in their car alone, I'm like, isn't the car itself enough of a face shield or a mask? You're driving around with your windows up. You're not going to get anything flying at you from outside, and you're not going to give anything to anybody either. I don't get it. Like, oh, I understand wearing it outside of the car. Why are you wearing it inside the car? Like, are you just so obsessed with the feeling of something on your face or a face shield, like, so you look like a transparent welder? I mean, wear it where you're supposed to wear it amongst other people, but I think your car is fairly safe for you. Anyway, unless you're picking up hitchhikers. And don't pick up hitchhikers. Very bad idea. You ever see the Rutger Hauer movie? Very bad idea. Especially if you pick up hitchhikers and then you go somewhere and order French fries. Very bad idea. Heading out today to get one of my favorite delicacies, a grilled cheese sandwich from Sam's Restaurant in Stouffville. It's a curbside pickup. I ordered it. French fries go with it. Proper French fries, not the abominations that a lot of places have called French fries these days. Things with batter on them and crap like that. A French fry should just be a French fry, if you know what I mean. If you've had proper French fries, you know what I mean. If you haven't, I pity you. So I'm heading there now, and it's proper grilled cheese too. Not these gourmet grilled cheeses, because what a bunch of horse shit that is. There's certain foods that should never be called gourmet, like hot dogs. What, do you have high-end lips and lobes and scrapings from the floor of the slaughterhouse? How can you have a gourmet hot dog? Hot dog is the food, it's the everyman food. It's for the common people. And to make it gourmet, you're taking something from the common people and you're putting it out of their reach and out of their life experience. I do not like gourmet hot dogs. I will not eat gourmet hot dogs because there's no such thing as a gourmet hot dog. There's only a hot dog that somebody calls gourmet and charges more for it. Don't get suckered. But I'm getting the proper grilled cheese, not the kind with real cheddar and three different types of cheese on double-decker bread. No, a proper grilled cheese is bread with butter on the inside, white bread with butter on the inside, and a Kraft single, and then put on the grill. That is a grilled cheese. You add anything to that, it is an abomination. I think that was in Leviticus in the Bible, where they talk about making grilled cheeses improperly, and they call them an abomination. You should look that up. I think it's Leviticus. I don't know the chapter. I would have my Bible here with me, but I'm afraid to walk out with it in case I'm holding it upside down. Anyway, thankfully things have calmed down a little bit in the U.S. The protests are staying a little bit more on point and under control. Now let's talk about these protests. Now, at first, my thought was, why are people destroying property? It's not going to help their case any, because instead of people focusing on the completely unjustifiable police-involved death of George Floyd, may he rest in peace, people start focusing on the violence instead. And that doesn't make any sense as far as a tactic, because you'd rather people be focused on the injustice committed to George Floyd and countless other people of color in the United States, and people here in Canada. We don't have anywhere near the rate of police-involved shootings and so on with members of minority communities. We still got problems, not just with the police, but individuals. Now, I don't think that, I don't think our systems are set up with rules to keep black people and people of color and minorities down. I think the problem is that there are people who are racist who are within the system, and the system is not just government, it's in business and so on. There are people who are racist, and they control levers of power in places, and they're the ones who make the system unfair to black people. The system, as it's written down on paper, doesn't expressly say anything about, actually, the system says you can't discriminate based on race, creed, color, you know, things of that nature, sexual orientation, and it's all well and good to have that written down, but the fact is, if you've got somebody doing hiring, and they themselves are bigoted against one particular group, or many particular groups, because chances are, when somebody's bigoted against one group, they tend to be bigoted against all groups, except for the group they belong in. But let's get back to the protests themselves. Now, so at first I thought, why are they burning things? It's not helping their cause. And some people were trying to tell me that it is self-defense when the protesters turn to rioters and start burning down stores, chain stores, mom-and-pop stores, destroying things, looting things, that it's self-defense because the system is against them and these stores are part of the system. So they have the right to defend themselves by going and destroying parts of the system. I don't buy that for half a second, okay? Because the Target store, is it part of the system? It's a big chain store, yeah, but it also employs a lot of people. So that store's burned down and the people who had jobs at Target and depend on that income now don't have jobs. And are they part of the system? They're on the shitty end of the stick. So you've just made the shitty end of the stick shittier. So I don't buy it as any kind of self-defense. I do buy it, however, as like Howard Beale, played by Peter Finch, said it in the movie Network, I'm mad as hell and I'm not gonna take it anymore. As a symbol of outrage and repressed rage that is finally bubbling to the surface and needs to be expressed and needs to get the attention of Americans so they can say, look, there's something here that is really wrong and it's been allowed to go on for too long. There's police shootings of black people in their own backyard and we get a bunch of people clucking their tongues on Twitter and we get a bunch of news people, you know, clutching their pearls, and then it moves on to the next story. So as a way of getting attention and focusing attention on America's problems with race in a way that America can't turn away from, yeah, I get that, and I support that. I don't support violence against people, but I do understand that, look, they've put up with it for so long. They've behaved for so long, people of color in the U.S. And let me tell you something. There are people in the states I know who say they are not racist, and they are racist. I think that there's a whole different bar for racism in the U.S. Because what they say is, oh, I don't hate them. They can't help being that way. That's just the way they are. I don't hate them for it. And it's like, no, that isn't the way they are. You are a racist. But I think that what's really been going on, and has been suggested, is that there are shit disturbers who understand there's going to be a protest, and they see it as their opportunity to go break shit. Because all they care about is breaking shit. They're anarchists. All they care about is going and breaking shit and causing damage to the infrastructure of the community and just being shit disturbers. They get to go out, wreck things, destroy things, set things on fire, steal things, and then they take off and let the peaceful protesters wear all that destruction. When the peaceful protesters were there to peacefully protest, as is their right, and I would say obligation in a democracy. I think that we are obligated to protest in a democracy when we see things happening that should not be occurring in our democracy. Things that our values tell us are wrong, we should be out there protesting. It is our obligation. This isn't like, you know, Canada, love it or leave it. And America shouldn't be love it or leave it either. America was formed on the basis of dissent from authority. America was built on the notion of dissent from authority and doing things differently. And now America is built on, actually, that was America being built. Now America is being destroyed by America, love it or leave it. If you say anything other than America is number one in every category under the sun, then you hate America and you should leave. The truth is, when you're willing to point out areas where your country's going astray so it can be fixed, that's an indication of loving your country, not hating your country. Hating your country is seeing things go badly, seeing injustices being perpetrated, and letting them keep going. Then you don't really care about your country. Leaving a status quo in place where people are habitually inconvenienced, harassed, killed, beaten, allowing that to stand and saying nothing about it and trying to silence people who are trying to call attention to it, that impulse is an impulse that hates the country, that doesn't believe that the country can do better, that doesn't believe that the country has core values that need to be respected. doesn't believe, is those are people who do not believe that all people were created equal. So there, that's my little soapbox. How's it going to change the U.S.? I don't know, but I was around during the Rodney King riots way back in the early 90s, and that didn't change anything. That was a lot of members of L.A.'s black community going to Koreatown and burning Korean businesses, and it didn't actually solve anything. I don't think it improved anything. This, though, they didn't have every single state in the union in the U.S. protesting with Rodney King. They had that here. The death of George Floyd was egregious. There's zero excuse in any circumstance for what that guy did. And America really needs to start screening its police a little bit better. Because, you know, there are some people who want to be cops to do something, to give back to the community, to help police and help keep it safe. Then there's people who want to be cops because they want to be something. They want to be a symbol of authority that people have to bow down and listen to. And those are the people you gotta cut out. You gotta have people who are there to serve the community, because the police do a good job serving the community in the communities where they do a good job, if you follow what I'm saying. There's always bad cops. It's like there's always bad everything in every line of work. The difference is those other lines of work aren't licensed and authorized to carry a gun and use it. So, well, you know, it's one thing to say, look, there's bad people in every industry, every field, sure, but when they're bad, they don't kill anybody. So we need to have police that are... They need better psych evaluations on these people. Because generally when you are authoritarian, the people I've met who have that authoritarian attitude, they're not that bright. And so you can, even if you think that they'll think that they're going to be able to fool the test, the psych evaluation, they won't be able to, because they're stupid. They don't like being questioned. Why don't they like being questioned? Because they themselves don't question. People who don't question are people who never want to seek knowledge, never want to learn, never want to get better. They're afraid of any change at all. So we need mandatory psychiatric evaluations on every single police officer, not just the new recruits. We need to send every cop that's currently in uniform for a psych eval, because things need to be done. Things need to be fixed. This is ridiculous already. And speaking of ridiculous, on the flip side, the death of that young woman, Regis. She was mentally ill. She was attacking her brother. Police had attended to her residence, I understand, twice before for the same kind of reasons. The family called the police. This is happening in Toronto. Family called the police and wanted them to take her to CAMH, which is the Center for Addiction and Mental Health in Toronto. The police got there. They asked the family to step back. Because families are wild cards, because their emotions are running high and they can inflame a situation. Very rare that they can make it better when you know, emotions are running that high. And so they went out, and she went out on the balcony. She ran out onto the balcony. They went out on the balcony, and she was calling for help, apparently, which makes complete sense. She's afraid. She's afraid of these cops going to take her back to CAMH. And then the security camera footage, is my understanding, that has surfaced showed she herself, with no prompting, tried to climb to the neighbor's balcony, and then she fell. The idea that the police would push this woman off the balcony to her death, it beggars the imagination. Why would a cop do that? Oh, because she's black and cops hate blacks. Come on. Even if the cops did hate black people, they love themselves, and they recognize police are under a bit of a microscope. They may not get charged, and if they get charged, they may not be convicted, but it's a mark on their police record. It's a year or more of time in court and expense, though I guess the police union picks up the cost, but their lives are completely upended. Why would two police officers decide to throw a woman in the throes of a mental health crisis off a balcony? Does that make sense, or does it make sense that the woman was in the throes of a mental health breakdown and did something which was erratic and put herself in danger, which did eventually take her life? Police do not want their entire life and professional career and the lives of their families affected by something they do on the job. The idea that they would throw her off, absurd. And the family has recanted, saying that they were very emotional at the time that they said what they did about the police, that they accept that she died by her own hand inadvertently. That's the problem with just hating something outright. I hate cops. All right, can I have your phone number? Because in case I get into a traffic accident or somebody's broken into my house or trying to break into my house or something of that nature, I'm going to call you. It doesn't matter what time, day or night, and you have to come and you have to solve the problem, because that's what police do. And if you don't want police, then I'm going to have to ask you to come and do it, because somebody's got to. Now, saying that police need to do a better job, well, yeah, there are some police that shouldn't even be there, like Nathan Forcillo, who used completely unnecessary force on Sammy Yateem. Sammy Yateem was no angel. He was very troubled. He was on drugs, and he was threatening people with a knife on the bus. He was no angel. He didn't deserve to die for that. And obviously, Forcillo panicked, and cops should not be panicking. You want a good example of Toronto policing? That incel who drove that van in North York on the sidewalk killing people. He wanted to die by cop. He was telling them, shoot me, shoot me. They're like, put down the gun. He said, shoot me, shoot me. And the cop said, no, I'm not going to shoot you. Put down the gun. In the States, the guy would have been ventilated. He would have looked like Swiss cheese. But here, they're loath to use deadly force. Now, there are some, some bad apples. And the police really need to stop protecting the bad apples. This blue wall of silence horse shit, this brotherhood and blue horse shit, sorry, you're allowing bad cops to make your policing look bad. You're allowing bad cops to make your job more difficult and more dangerous. You gotta call out the people who are not holding up the ideals of policing. All right. I know it's odd you're hearing this from a sock puppet, but where else are you gonna get it from? Something that's clear and straight to the point. You know, I always tell you exactly what I'm thinking, and that's what I'm doing now. Also, I'm very close to getting my grilled cheese sandwich. I'm glad that even though there's still the partial lockdown on, I can still get this grilled cheese sandwich. Two pieces of white bread, butter on the inside of each, Kraft slice onto the grill with proper French fries. Not curly fries, not garlic fries, not fries with batter all over them, just regular fries. It's a good, honest meal. Plus, I'm going to get a root beer, because I like root beer. I know root beer always sounds like something a kid should drink, but fuck you! Don't judge me! I like to drink root beer, so screw you! Alright, I'm pulling up now to get my grilled cheese sandwich. I'm going to give you a little bit of intermission music. Here we go.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Ah, okay. That hit the spot. Nice grilled cheese sandwich. Two pieces of white bread, butter on the inside. Piece of processed cheese. Ah, now that is the food of the gods. Anyway, so back on the road again. So let's talk a little bit about other aspects of this protest, most notably Antifa. Now, Trump says he's going to list Antifa as a terrorist organization. The problem with that is Antifa isn't an organization. I don't think Antifa is real. And here's why. First of all, a group calling itself Antifa is not an umbrella for everybody who's anti-fascist, and Antifa doesn't own anti-fascist sentiment or demonstrations. There'll be lots of people out there who oppose fascism who don't consider themselves part of Antifa. And why do I say Antifa's not real? Because it doesn't have any leaders. It doesn't have any vetted membership or listed membership. It doesn't have any rules. How do you have an organization where nobody is in charge? So as long as there's nobody in charge, there's no committee, there's no anything, it's not really an organization. Because anybody can show up and say they're part of Antifa, and nobody is around to say, no, they're not. Because in order to have somebody around to say, no, they're not, you need a leader, you need structure, you need a spokesperson or spokespeople. They don't have any of that. So you got people showing up just to smash shit. And that's what they did. I think a lot of people showed up to discredit the peaceful protesters. And we'll never know for sure. I mean, they have arrested some white supremacists and stuff in connection with riot activity, so that should tell you something, because white supremacists, I don't think they're out there protesting racial inequalities. In fact, if they're out there protesting racial inequalities, they're protesting that there aren't enough of them. So, we'll find out, or we never will, but to really discredit everything and the movement that but to really discredit the movement that has started, an alliance of people of color and white people who are standing up and saying, no, this isn't good anymore. We can't keep sweeping it under the rug. The rug is now 6 feet in the air. We can't sweep anything more under the rug. We've got to face it. Let's not, tar them with the brush of people who showed up just to, be anarchists. And anarchists are going to anarchist. I don't know if that's a term. Is anarchist a verb? Well, it is now. By the way, I'm sick to death of these liberal white people. And I say liberal with a small L, not associated with the party. These liberal white people who are louder on my social media about racial inequalities and injustice than the people of color are. And something tells me that's a little bit off. Now, I've long said that social media is a place where people get offended on behalf of other people who never asked them to be offended for them and were never asked if they could be offended for them. So this is only proving my point. But these liberals who go out of their way to lose their mind and say, you can't... What I love is liberals who tell me that I can't speak to a topic that only people of color can speak to it. Well, what the hell do you think you're doing by telling me what I can do with a topic? You're doing the exact same thing. These bloody hypocrites are so eager to show everybody that they're not racist. And I got news for you. People who go out of their way to criticize everybody else, every other person they perceive as being white, as being racist or being racially insensitive, those are the people that I believe probably are or have been very racially insensitive to others in the past. It just feels like a guilty conscience. They're coming after me and other people because they're trying to assuage their guilty conscience, and they think that by standing up on a soapbox on Twitter and putting out some messages that somehow that is going to cleanse them of their sins. Well, it isn't, okay? The only thing that cleanses you of your sins is doing something more than just tweeting to try to get, help people of color. And there was somebody who was suggesting that the way to help people of color and to show that you are denying your white privilege is that when you're offered a job, don't take it. Because you're taking it, it means that a person of color who might have applied is not going to get the job. This is ridiculous. There is nothing that says we can't try to better ourselves economically. There's no reason that because your skin is white or Caucasian, you should give up trying to better your financial situation for yourself and your family so that maybe the job will go to a person of color. That's just stupid. Who's to say it will? And the best thing you can do is when you're in a position to help out a person of color, help them. If you're an employer and you're hiring people, don't look at a person's skin. Examine, before you do interviews, examine your own built-in biases that might be there. You don't have to admit them to anybody else, just to yourself, which sometimes is actually harder. But you need to make sure that when you're making a decision to who you're hiring, it has nothing to do with racial background, ethnic background, religious background. That's what you need to do. You don't have to turn down a job, but you do have to, when you're in a position to help somebody who's asking you for help, or you see somebody who needs help and doesn't even know who to turn to, you help them. That's how we help. And when you're in a mixed crowd and somebody makes a joke that is either racially insensitive or racist, you gotta not laugh. You have to markedly not laugh. You have to say something and not say, that is offensive, I am offended. You have, because that just gets people's back up. And if they would have backed down, they won't now because they're embarrassed. You have to sort of do it in a lighter way and say, hey, come on, it's 2020. Are we really still telling those jokes? Like, don't stand there beating them with a 2x4. Do it in such a way that allows them to back off while at the same time telling everybody, this joke isn't acceptable. Because often people laugh at those things because they think other people are laughing at them, and they don't want to stand out as being the wet blanket. Which I don't understand, because I've always been fine with being a wet blanket, as long as it's not wet from a nocturnal emission. So you've got to just let other people there know that it's okay to say that this isn't funny. Sometimes that's all they need. They're not racist either. They're just uncomfortable. So you do it in a way that allows the person to retain some measure of dignity, so that they will willingly back off and back down without losing face too much. And then you'll signal to other people in the crowd that it is okay to call attention to bad behavior. All right? And again, you're hearing this from a sock puppet, because who the hell else is giving it to you this straight? Well, that was a good grilled cheese sandwich, I tell you. Yeah. The fries, I'll be honest with you, the fries are a little disappointing. I think they've changed fries. I think they've gone with one of those big company, like McCain or something like that, fries. And these fries, they smack of a bit of batter to them. They're not, the crispiness is artificial. You know when you bite into it and you expect a certain taste from potato chip, like to taste like potatoes, and you get your french fry and it, like, that's awfully crispy. It seems artificially crispy, and the taste isn't quite right. Wow, I just saw a car go by me, a two-toned Chrysler 300. It's tan and orange with stripes going up the door. See, that's deliberate. Somebody has to do that. Like that guy, you don't just buy a car off the lot with that kind of paint job. You got to go to somebody and ask them to do that paint job. So you had to have it in your head. Like, think of all the steps you have to take to get a paint job like that. All the places where you could have stopped and said, wait, why the hell am I doing this? And yet you didn't stop and say that. And now you're driving around in a car that's cream or tan on the top and orange on the bottom with stripes along the doors. I mean, if you want to attract attention, you're attracting attention. But, you know, you can attract attention by defecating in public and wiping the feces on your face. Is that what you really want to do to get attention? Maybe some people would. I don't think that's good attention. We have to, in Canada, retain an understanding of the difference between famous and infamous. In America, they long ago lost that separation. All they care about is if people know who they are. Because if people know who they are, then they live, then they exist. If people don't know who they are, then they don't really exist. It's like Buck Henry's movie, To Die For, with Nicole Kidman. The character said, if you're not famous in America, you're nobody. Or some quote like that. But that was basically the gist of it. If you're not famous, you're nothing. And that's America. That's why they don't care if they get famous for doing horrible things. They just want to know that they're famous. What they do to get there, they don't care. The ramifications or the context of how they got famous, they don't care. All that matters is they're famous. And you know what Americans do to somebody who gets famous for doing bad things? Usually they wind up giving them a reality show. And I'm not being facetious. So, yeah, reality shows. Wonder what's going to happen with TV when TV comes back. You know, my solution nobody took. My solution was to have all the actors do like they do in like Star Wars movies and shoot all their lines alone on a green screen, and then just, green screens are easy to composite, just put them all together and time it out. That's what you should do. Just have the actors all shoot their lines in isolation and then put them all together in the final edit. That's what I would do. But they're saying that, you know, some shows are supposed to come back in fall of 2020, aren't going to be back till earliest winter of 2021. So it's going to be a long period where there's no new shows. Or maybe there's some new shows that were already shot and are just going through editing now, and they'll be out, but a far reduced number of TV shows. So people are going to have to reach back into Netflix or Disney Plus or whatever you have, CBS All Access, to find shows to binge watch. I should do a little list of movies people should watch that were good and never got their fair share or their fair shake. Maybe I'll do that. And TV shows you should watch. There's a TV show that probably most people haven't seen. And if you like action films and you like sort of post-apocalyptic stories and you like martial arts, there's a show called Into the Badlands, which is set a few hundred years after world society has collapsed. We don't know how or why it collapsed, but unlike most of these shows set in that kind of setting, this isn't a bunch of burned out buildings and stuff. It's actually, I think it takes place in Georgia, or what used to be Georgia in this story. It's returned to almost a feudal system. And there's different houses run by different barons who have their own territory. And the costumes are amazing. I know it's usually something you might hear from somebody who is homosexual, but you can be heterosexual now and say you like the costumes. As long as you don't do that snap thing, that's very, very gay. Don't be taking things away from gay people. They only have so many things that are theirs. Don't be taking the snap from gay people, all right? That's theirs. They own it. Anyway, the colors in the show are unbelievably vivid. I don't know, I think they boosted the saturation or something, but But you should watch Into the Badlands. The action sequences are unbelievable. They're amazing. And it's a good story. It's about basically this one guy who used to be an enforcer for one of the houses who quit to go out on his own because he didn't believe in what was going on. And eventually he's got his own baby that he has to take with him into this harsh world. And it's about the warring between the Badlands barons. The first episode, the first season, the villain is a little bit cardboard, a little bit moo-ha-ha-ha. But you continue, but there's enough good to overcome that. But in season two and onward, it's just so amazing. You should watch it. And if you've never seen the TV show Silicon Valley, it's by Mike Judge, who did Beavis and Butthead and Idiocracy and King of the Hill. And it's got his typical trademark incisive, insightful humor, but it's set in Silicon Valley and sends up the entire culture of video games and computers and web development. And it's so sharp. A few times I think I cut myself on how sharp the humor is. It's got no laugh track, but you don't need one because it is laugh out loud funny. So you should check out Silicon Valley and Into the Badlands, and maybe I'll find a few more shows you might want to have a look at. Maybe I'll even find some foreign shows, because some of them aren't shit on a stick. Most of them I can't stand. And I won't watch a show that has subtitles and is spoken in another language, because I don't watch TV to read. I read books to read. I watch TV to watch. I don't like that if I go into the kitchen and I can still hear my TV. I like it to be speaking in English so I can follow what's happening while I'm in the kitchen. But if they're talking in another language but there's subtitles, I can't read the subtitles from another room. So I don't like shows that have subtitles. All right? Just dub the damn thing like they do everywhere else in the world. Just dub it in English. There's a lot of people who are hoity-toity. Oh, I love foreign films. I love foreign television. It is so much better than North American television. No, it's not. The series that we get here from other countries are the best examples of programming from those countries. I guarantee you, you go there and look at the rest of their programming, it's as much a shit on the stick as the majority of programming is here. There's always a few gems, and everyone will pick out what gems or what they consider to be gems, because everybody has different tastes, because television, like any other art form, it's subjective. How you receive it, how you relate to it is subjective. But those two shows I told you about, if you don't like them, then there's something wrong with you. You really need to seek help. All right, I'm pulling back into my home now. Nice talking to you. I'll be back with stuff that's maybe a little funnier next time. This was a little serious, but we're living in times that ain't that funny all the time, are they? You know, the Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. I don't like interesting times. Though on one hand, I do think that the interesting times relating to the protests against racial inequality and poor policing, I think I'll endure those times because that's something that has to happen. Because otherwise, it just goes back to people of color carrying it on their shoulders day in and day out. And you know, it's time for all of us to get in there and start sharing the burden until the burden goes away and nobody has to live with being discriminated against by, that's utopian bullshit. People are always going to be discriminated against for one thing or another. You know, we discriminate against people who don't like the same sports teams that we do, who don't like the same movies that we do, who don't like the same company of, company's comic books that we do, don't dress the way we do. We discriminate all the time, and we're not going to get rid of that. There's going to be personal biases all the time. But, you know, if you're judging somebody by what they wear, that's more fair than judging somebody based on their skin color or ethnicity. Because their skin color and ethnicity, that was locked in at birth. It was locked in, actually, at the moment the egg was fertilized. They had no say over that. But you do have say over what you wear. So what you wear, if somebody's judging you by it, that's kind of fair. Because you're choosing to present yourself in this way to the world. Except for people who don't have the financial wherewithal and have to wear whatever they can get. That's a different story. But people who are wearing expensive clothing and looking like idiots in it, it's fair to think they're idiots. But I'd like there to be a time when we don't have to worry about people feeling that they're getting a unfair treatment from the police, where we don't have a plethora of videos from the U.S. of police beating up on black kids. And the thing that's also disturbing is some of those videos, there's black cops beating up on black kids. So it goes to show you, the culture of policing is stronger than the ties that bind with through skin color or shared culture or ethnic culture. So the culture of policing has to change. Maybe we'll see that as a result of these protests. I don't know. Right now it's up in the air. Protests have started to get a little bit quieter. I hope they don't all go away. I don't want this to just be a blip. That's, once again, everything goes under the carpet. We need to make changes. And I know the general public, we're generally busy with our own lives and more so than ever trying to make, you know, make ends meet and so on. We don't have a lot of time to be involved in activist events. But I think we need to find a way to make time or do something. Even if you only do it over the computer, there's things that you can do that are helpful that are more than just putting out a tweet and then sitting back and basking in your righteous glow. All right. Hey, listen to other shows here on FU Network. There's Mansplaining and Hey Ladies and Broken Clock, which is a podcast about critical thinking. My God, that's in short supply nowadays. There's FU Politics, the flagship show, which I host, talking about politics weekly. There's Matter of Fact. There's Steven and Steven. There's lots of shows to listen to. So check it out under FU Politics. We're hoping to move it to just be FU Network shortly, so we can expand. There's also the new show with me, Ben Rayner, who was 22 years the music journalist for The Star, and Eric Alper, who's been a longtime music publicist, where we talk about issues in music. The first two we did, one is, why don't we have any more music that defines a generation? Like we used to have, you know, grunge and stuff like that, defined an outlook or a feeling amongst a generation. We don't have that anymore, because everything's curated, you know, individually curated. Second topic was, where do you find good music nowadays? With so much out there now, because everybody can record and have themselves published worldwide, where do you find the good stuff? How do you pick the fly shit out of the salt? Stuff like that. But also, we're starting a new campaign, Buck the System. What it means is, we're trying to do something different than the mainstream media are. We're giving you grassroots, relatable, person-to-person kind of programming. And we need your help to do that. The big guns, they've got lots of money from investors and shareholders and advertisers. We don't have that. What we do have is you. Because FU stands for an attitude, but it also stands for us and for you. That's why we do these shows. Shows that sound like you, because we are you. All the people on our shows are just, you know, normal people with intelligence and opinions founded in intelligence and the ability to communicate them. So anyway, we're asking you just give a buck. If everybody who listens gives a buck, either through Patreon as a monthly subscriber for a dollar, or even just a one-time boost of a dollar on PayPal, we'll be able to afford to repair our equipment, buy the equipment that we need, and ramp up the stuff that we're developing for FU Music to make it truly the sequel to Much Music. So Patreon is at Patreon, that's Patreon with an E, patreon.com/FUNetworkTV, and at PayPal, send it to our email address, FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. All right, that's it. Time for me to put this into park and for you to go about your regular business. I'm Ed the Suck. Thank you for listening. Probably the smartest thing you did today. Now, that's not saying much these days. People don't have a whole lot to do. Okay, see ya. This is fun. The FU Network.